Okay, we don't have a quorum quite yet, but I do want to get the committee started so we can make sure we go through all of our bills. We do have four bills on the agenda, so it's a tight agenda, and if we can make sure that we allow time for testifiers. Since we don't have a quorum, we can't approve minutes yet at this point, so if I can just ask Representative Norton to come up, and we'll start testimony on House File 785. Representative Norton.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Hush. I'm here today to bring forward an important piece of legislation, and it concerns parental fees. The issue of parental fees and waivers came up repeatedly during the campaigns in the last several years, and for good reason. During the 2003 budget crisis and the No New Tax Pledge era, the state was in a position to make significant reductions in spending across many areas of government. Many of these cuts impacted the lives of our most vulnerable populations, including our children and persons with disabilities and their families. This bill, House File 785, addresses just one area impacted by the changes in 2003. While some modifications were offered in 2005, families who are receiving medical assistance in TEFRA, children who are permanently disabled and require significant levels of care, are still facing financial hardships through parental fees. House File 785 seeks to give parents taking care of their children at home a $100 credit per month off their fee, thus providing up to $1,200 of relief for families, about 3,839 families. It's pretty specific, but it's really an estimate. Families will be affected. There's also a component to the bill that I'd like to point out that clarifies that parents may use their parental fees as a pre-tax medical expense deduction. Some industries and businesses currently allow this, others do not. This bill will help families be able to fulfill state policy, which seeks to support families to maintain their children with disabilities at home to the maximum extent possible. I do have some persons from ARC, Minnesota, who perhaps would like to join me.
Please.
And they'd like to provide testimony.
Welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record, please.
I will. Okay, you can sit right there, sweetheart. My name is Kim Stanley. I usually bring a big picture of Alex with me, but today I'm doing one better. I'm bringing both my kids here in the flesh. This is Courtney, and this is Alex. My name is Kim Stanley, and I am the mother of two children with special needs. Courtney, 9, has Fragile X, ADHD, anxiety disorder, dyslexia, and learning disabilities. Alex, 7, has autism, disruptive behavior disorder, seizures, and OCD. I am a stay-at-home mom that homeschools for reasons we will not get into today. When I was asked to speak today, about a million things went through my head on what to say. I could tell you how hard it is for our families, but you already know that. I could tell you that we need more help than we are getting, but you already know that. Or I could tell you how you can help, but you already know that too. So I decided to talk about all of it just to make sure you really understand what our lives are like and why we really need your help lowering the parental fee for TEFRA. With all that I do and who I am, I do not have time to beat around the bush or sugarcoat anything. So what I'm going to say today will be straightforward as to what the legislature needs to do and why. There may or may not be a surplus this year, and I am sure if there is, everyone has an idea of how to spend it. Transportation is right up there at the top, as is education and health care. All of these are important and affect all of us either directly or indirectly. Health care happens to affect us very directly. As I said, I have two children with special needs. Raising two spirited typical children is always a challenge, but raising two spirited children with special needs is hard. We have a new legislature in both the House and the Senate this year, and we will also have a lot of children being diagnosed with disabilities this year, both developmental and physical. So what does that mean to our new legislators? A whole lot. In 2003, when some of the legislators decided that the disabled and elderly were the ones to balance the budget, by raising the parental fees and prescription copays, it was one of the most counterproductive moves they could have made. It backfired on them, and we still have a budget deficit, and a lot of people either dropped TEFRA because they couldn't afford the increased fee, or the families are in debt up to their eyeballs with the state. We are in the latter category. My husband, who is also disabled with a rare muscle disease and fibromyalgia, is working full-time plus to keep a roof over our head and food on the table. We have medical bills, electric, phone, and all the other bills that everybody else has. The difference is our medical bills include our parental fee, as well as any other services Alex or Courtney may need to get them the tools and support that you and I take for granted. When someone says, is your child on a sensory diet, do you have any idea what that means? Or why is your child behaving like that? Doesn't he have any social skills? The answer is no. These are areas that we have to pay for things out of our own pocket. Social skills are not considered medical, but our children cannot survive without it. Society wouldn't have it. As for a sensory diet, that would be a trampoline, monkey bars, fidget toys, or other equipment to help the sensory system. This is equipment not considered medical, so we have to pay for this out of pocket as well. I just got my current invoice in the mail for my TEFRA payment, and we owe the state $6,443.73. We have a payment arrangement with our financial worker because we can't pay the monthly amount legislators have put on us. Now we are being told that we are not paying enough each month and our balance is too high, and they have put us on the Minnesota Recapture Program. We are paying the most in each month, and yet it is not enough. So our state taxes and property taxes will be taken from us. I know you all have a lot to learn and understand, and unless you walk in our shoes or spend time with us, which you are all welcome to do at any time, you will never really understand what our lives are like. So when you have to decide either to pay for transportation needs, education, health care, to name a few, please remember us and that you can make a difference in our lives and make it a little easier. We are already counting pennies to make ends meet. We are asking you to help us bring the ends closer together. Lowering the parental fees to a more reasonable amount for what money we really live on, and maybe even considering reducing or forgiving the families who have large balances due to the 2003 increase. With this lowering our fees, the HF 785 does this, and it would be more manageable for us, for all of us, to be able to survive.
Thank you, Ms. Stanley, and welcome, Courtney and Alex. It's good to have you here. I saw that you were heard that you were driving your car earlier, Alex. I think that's neat. Since we do have a quorum here now, I do want to call the committee to order. We do have minutes that need to be approved for March 6th, and if Representative Thiessen will move the minutes. Okay. The minutes are moved. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay. With none being so, all those in favor signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion does carry and the minutes are approved. I also want to remind members to please turn off your cell phones and Blackberries, not just on the vibrate mode, but completely off, because it is interfering with the tape for recording the committee.
It's the elevator.
Yeah, the elevator's going crazy. Okay. No, I mean, not the elevator now, but the interference on the committee meetings. If we can also continue discussion on House File 785, I will officially move House File 785 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the final omnibus bill. And if we can have further discussion, Representative Abel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Norton, I appreciate your work on this bill. I worked on this myself, actually, in the 2003 session, tried to find a way to soften the blow, and it's sad that we couldn't be as successful as we wanted. I want to remind members that the bill asks for $5 million and $6 million in the out year, and that whatever number we have available, that's scalable. And there's a chart that gets made up, and so you can find a way to float the money up and down and go after different target audiences. And so there's some flexibility, and whenever you cut the line, there's a cliff. And so it's not an easy problem, but it's good we can address this and hope there's some money available to give some relief. Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson with the ARC of Minnesota, and we advocate for individuals with developmental disabilities and their families. And I want to follow up on Representative Abler's kind remarks and point out that the fiscal note, about half of it roughly, is for the enrollment of new individuals. By lowering the fees The state is estimating that an additional 514 people would come back on the program that had gone off the program before. And so we designed a formula, hopefully, that would help out families, but as a result, it helps them out in two ways. It helps those people that are currently on the program to be able to afford to stay on the program, and it gives additional coverage for individuals, and that's why the fiscal note is the size that it is. And as Representative Abler stated so well, it can be adjusted, and we're willing to have further discussions on it as necessary.
Sure. Representative Abler. In fact, I didn't know about, Mr. Chair. So when we were trying to get $1 million and $2 million and all that, so we did something, but not all we wanted to do. So by the fact we could only do some of it, actually the savings, so would the state save some money it wasn't counting on saving because of the people who dropped out? Or was that foreseen at the time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, yes, I believe that at that time the fiscal note included the calculation that people would be dropping off the program.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Any further questions in regards to Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who can answer this. Maybe Representative Thiessen or maybe research. How many families were affected by this change? And how many would be helped if this change were to be accomplished? Maybe the fellow from ARC knows.
Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the last figure we had was approximately 4,000 people. That might be updated by the DHS staff if they're here. It wasn't included, the total number of people on it that I can find on the fiscal note.
And Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me, because I'm reading the fiscal note, the difference between a $2,400 credit applied to a parent's income and the $100 monthly credit. So if it's a monthly credit that would apply instead, that reduces their monthly payment. Is that correct, directly, rather than have this credit on their income tax?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's correct. The $2,400 comes off the adjusted gross income. This would switch it back to the language that existed prior to 2003 to come directly off the fee, the $100 credit.
Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Stanley. Appreciate you being here today and taking your kids with us to advocate. The disability community has good, strong advocates, but there's no better advocates than moms and dads, and we appreciate you being here today. In 2003, we did have a $4.5 billion deficit, and this year we are looking at a surplus, and some of that is one-time money and some of it is ongoing money, but the governor is looking at spending an additional 9% in the current budget. We're also looking at education increases in K-12 of $1 billion or more, so we do definitely have extra dollars now that we did not have in 2003. And we need to fund our priorities, and this is a definite priority, so I'm looking forward to our bill and prioritizing needs like yours within that growing budget. But I do once again thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Representative Root.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Stanley, for being here today. It's always good to see you. I have a question. First, I guess I would say a comment and regarding Representative Dean's comments regarding that surplus we're going to be hearing a lot about and spend many times over, that we all have to be cognizant of proper accounting measures, I guess, and be aware of shifts and things like that. That aside, I would ask Ms. Stanley, and I don't know if you're the right person to ask this or not, but you mentioned that you are in arrears, 6,400 or so?
Yeah, it's probably higher by now. I haven't looked at a bill lately.
Do you know the total number of families involved that also have a similar situation?
I know a dollar figure, but I don't know the number of families, but I do know that there are a lot.
What is the dollar figure? You
know? The dollar figure as of the end of 2004, or July of 2004, was $2 million.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chair, I don't know who to ask this to, but how is that, how do we account for that? Where is that in the budget? If it's money that...
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Rood, we might ask the staff from DHS to comment on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and if you can state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Ricker. I'm a Financial Operations Division employee of the Department of Human Services. If you could repeat the question.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Ms. Stanley was mentioning that she is in arrears to the tune of $6,400.
Almost $7,000, yeah.
Okay, yeah. How does that get accounted, I guess? I mean, just where does that show up in our budget?
I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't know exactly where that is. The fees that we do collect are counted as or considered non-dedicated revenue and are applied to the general fund. How they show up as an outstanding receivable, I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay. Thank you. That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions? If you could get back to the committee on that question, Mr. Ricker, that would be greatly appreciated.
I will.
It appears that there are no further questions on the bill. The chair will renew his motion to lay over House File 785 for possible inclusion in the final omnibus bill. If there's no objection, the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Norton. Thank you, Ms. Stanley, and to Courtney and Alex for coming today. And it was great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Next bill on our agenda is House File 1288, Representative Murphy, and I will move House File 1288 to be. Representative Murphy moves House File 1288 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the final omnibus bill. And I won't welcome you to the committee, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for that kind welcome. House File 1288 would increase the transportation rate for DTNHs by $2 per day for clients. DTNHs, or DACs, Day Training and Rehabilitation Services, are community integration and life skills service providers to adults with developmental disabilities. They include support in finding and maintaining employment with services, community involvement, continuing education, retirement programs, leisure, recreation, and transportation, as well as psychological and behavioral support. There are 275 DTHs in the state serving almost 14,000 clients. Some of the DTHs include Wright County Connection, 1 and 2, Sibley County DAC, Wacosa, Opportunity Partners, and Composure. DTHs have both an operational rate and a transportation rate. Both rates are set when the facility is first opened. And while there have been small cost of living increases over the years to address the wages of direct care staff, there has never been an increase in the transportation rate. DTNHs are responsible for the transportation of clients to and from their home and to their work site. When the transportation rate was first set, most employment took place in community centers in a community work setting. Now, that's changed. As a result, 58% of the DTNH participants have jobs in the community with over 6,000 employers. This is a great accomplishment, but it also adds to the cost of transportation. This transition into the community, coupled with the increase in fuel costs, has put a strain on the transportation budgets for DTNHs. In 2006, over 8 million miles were driven by DTHs, and in many instances, operating dollars have to be used to subsidize the transportation costs. House File 1288 would address the need for more transportation funding for day training and rehabilitation services. I have with me two providers who can talk more specifically about their programs, Mr. Charlie Oakes and Lynn Megan, and I'd like to turn it over to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, and the testifiers can state their names for the record.
Thank you, Chairman and Representatives. I'm Lynn Megan. I am the President and Chief Executive Officer of TSE, which stands for Training, Support, and Employment. We're primarily located in Ramsey County. I live in St. Paul and am the proud constituent of Representative Murphy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here representing day training rehabilitation providers who are members of Minnesota Rehabilitation Coalition, MHC. We're a provider association representing DTNHs throughout the state. DTNHs provide supervision and training for people with disabilities whose primary goals are to enable individuals with disability to become contributing members of their community through employment or other activities. Rates, as Representative Murphy has stated, have been set for us historically. We operate with a program rate and a transportation rate. Many of our member organizations' transportation rates are very, very low, being set many years ago. Generally, new programs have higher transportation rates. DTNH's primary revenue source is paid for through Medicaid and labor services dollars. Again, as was stated, DTNHs are mandated to provide transportation services for the participants of our programs. No other provider is responsible for that service. DTNH transportation rates vary across the state. Based on information from DHS, the lowest transportation rate is $3.31 a day per day per person, and the highest rate is $24.36 per day per person, with the average rate being $10.26. This is not per ride per person, it is per day per person. Many individuals receive multiple rides per day. DTNHs have changed dramatically over the past 50 years. Initially, people with disabilities lived in large group settings and all came to in-center programs with the primary goal of something to do during the day. Because of the larger size of the residents and smaller numbers of them, we used to transport the people on several large buses. Now people with disabilities primarily live in 4 to 6 person homes in communities. When we learned people with disabilities could work with more complicated tasks and they could work, that work was primarily done in center with light manufacturing and the like. We now have realized and worked with people with disabilities to hold regular jobs in our communities. Today, 58% of individuals with disabilities receiving services from DTNHs are employed with community jobs. This is great, wonderful opportunities for people with disabilities. However, 99% of people with disabilities do not drive, so they are reliant on public transportation or provider transportation. Public transportation, as we know, in most communities is not good or a reliable option for people with disabilities. To get people to DTNHs now, we drive to multiple houses in the community, either transport to our service site or take directly to a job in the community. If their job is part-time, then they're picked up at their job and brought to one of our center-based programs where they work on job and work skills and may participate in other community activities. Then they're brought home later in the day. This equals at least 3 rides per day for most individuals. Remember, when our transportation rates were set, they were set with the fact that people received 2 rides, only to the DTNH and home again. I'm the president of TSC Incorporated. We're licensed as a DTNH. We're a nonprofit. We've been in business since 1961. We serve 240 individuals, primarily in Ramsey County. We have 4 service sites located throughout the county. We work with 61 community businesses. We have 30 individuals who work independently with follow-along supports from TSC and work with 31 community businesses with crews of 4 to 5 workers. We provide transportation for 99% of those individuals. Many individuals we serve receive at least 3 and sometimes 4 rides per day. At TSC, we provide approximately 545 regularly scheduled rides per day for the 240 people that we serve. We pick people up at their homes, take them to their jobs, perhaps to center, out on community outings. This logs us approximately 2,700 miles per day. At TSC, our transportation rates are $11.50 for three of our sites and $17.42 for one of our sites, and that was our site that we just opened 3 years ago. Our approximate revenue received from our billable days for transportation is $653,000. Our transportation expenses are just over $1 million, with the net difference of $385,750. That equates to $6.59 per day per person that then needs to come from our program rate. Needless to say, we have a very tight budget. It's become increasingly more difficult to meet all other financial obligation with the continued rising cost of transportation and constant demands on our transportation services. Please support individuals with disabilities and the DTNHs that they receive services from by supporting House File 1288, which is asking to increase our transportation rates by $2 a day per person. As I said, at TSC, we have been able to provide our transportation, we've been able to have our transportation revenues, in order to meet, have our transportation revenues meet our expenses, we would need the $6.59 a day. This bill would partially correct a historic imbalance between reimbursement and actual transportation expenses. DTNHs have borne this shortage of funding for transportation for the last 15 to 20 years since we've supported individuals with disabilities in community jobs and community activities. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you for your... We have a couple questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I beat out Representative Thiessen. But his hand was up first, but thank you very much. To the testifier, do you have a map that shows the transportation scope throughout the state so those of us who live in rural Minnesota can see how these services extended to our areas? Do you have or some kind of report available for us?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we can certainly work to provide that for you. We are located, I believe, our brochure state, and we'll provide you a copy of this. We do have day training services in 87 of our counties.
Representative Houston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on this transportation rate, it varies by... The rate varies by what? Per kind of per facility. What? Why do you have 17 at one and 11 at one? Is it kind of like sparsity revenue? We have an education. If you have to travel far, you get higher rates, or what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, it is historically set. So our program, for example, began in 1961. So our rates that are $11.50 that in 1961 were at probably pretty adequate for there. Our program that $17.52 just started 3 years ago. So we were able to work and negotiate with the county and the state in setting those rates to get a higher rate to show because of the more the cost that we have with it.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a you get this rate for every person in your program, regardless. I mean, some has more transportation needs than others, but it's just a flat rate for every person.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, yes, it is a per day per person. So it's not per ride, it is per day. So if a person does not attend our services for the day, we do not bill for that day.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, and then you have a program rate that you get as well? But presumably you don't get that if the person doesn't show up. I guess where my question is going is, why do you have a transportation rate and a program rate? Why don't you just have one rate?
Mr. Chair,
and maybe it's not you that should answer it.
I am pretty new to this. Yeah. I've just been on the day training rehabilitation side for 1 year. It's historically set, and there is a bill in place, and we will be looking toward to do different things with our rates. Through the years, it's been a question for how DTNH rates are set, and there's always been the separation between transportation and program. No. If anyone can answer it better, sorry.
Okay. And
We do have a few more questions. No, that's fine. Why don't we just go ahead with your testimony, Ms. Oak, so we can make sure that you can get your commentary in. So if you could just state your name for the record.
My name is Charles Oaks, and I'm the executive director of West Central Industries in Wilmer and Hutchinson. And I've been working with people with disabilities for about 33 years. And I've watched the system change. When we first started moving people out of the regional treatment centers, we started moving them out into community programs. First off, the first group of people that came to us were walking and talking and were people that didn't have as many needs as the folks that we're currently getting. Now the regional treatment centers are basically emptied out. And the original model was that you would have sort of an orphanage kind of model. You'd have a 16-bed group home, and you'd send one big Dodge Ram van, and you'd fill up your van, and you'd bring them to the center, and then at the end of the day, you'd bring them home. Mm-hmm. Well, now we have converted over the last 10 years mm-hmm. to these 4-bed labored homes, so we have scattered residential sites. And then in addition to that, we've also begun having community employment. And as these ladies have ably testified, well over half of our folks have community job sites. The ones that don't have community job sites probably are going to the library or the cafe for coffee. They're getting some integration issues going. As long as I've been in the business, there has always been a separate transportation rate from a program rate. And I assume that's because when the model was developed to move the folks out of the regional treatment centers, there was a decision made that the transportation obligation would go to the day program and not to the residential program. Now, whether that was a good decision or not, I don't know. It was quite a while ago. But the result of that is, for those programs that have been in the business since the beginning, they have received, I hate to say inflationary increases, they've received percentage increases each year, but there hasn't been any real adjustment for the change in the model. And the cost of living increases that we have received have been earmarked directly for staff wages, and that's a wonderful thing. The people in our business are poorly paid. We have a very high turnover rate in the average full-time person working with folks with disabilities is making probably $9 an hour. They need that. But if you earmark all the money for the program side and for the staff side, that doesn't account for the cost of the buses and the vans and the tires and the diesel fuel, which right now is way higher than gasoline. So that's why we're coming to you for help, because by subsidizing the transportation portion out of our program budget, that means we're taking hands away from people that need the services that are in their individual service plans. This switch from center-based programming to community-based programming has also meant that instead of having our clients have a schedule of Monday through Friday, 9 to 3, in many cases our clients are working late into the evening and on weekends as well. I have a good friend named Neil, and Neil uses a wheelchair to get around. And Neil works out at Walmart in Wilmer. He's a greeter. Welcome to Walmart and to your cart. We can get him there. We just can't get him home. Because if it isn't for us, public transit turns off about 7 o'clock at night. So we become the de facto public transit for our clients. And that was never envisioned in the original model that set up this transportation rate 30 years ago. I have another friend, Bob, working out at the Home Depot. He's doing a great job. Same thing. Transportation is a big challenge. Susie's working down at the Kentucky Fried Chicken. They like her. They don't work 9 to 3 Monday through Friday. They work, and these are good jobs. They're paying well above minimum wage. We also, as I mentioned, the COLAs that we have received since 2003 have not kept up with inflation to begin with. And at the same time, our license fees doubled for the Department of Human Services, and other user fees have gone up. So when we got together for our legislative convention last fall with all of the programs from across the state, the number one legislative priority was what are we going to do to keep the buses rolling so that we can still provide the services, so that we can get the clients to their jobs, and we can get them home at the end of their shift. And that's what we're here asking your help with.
Thank you very much, Mr. Oaks. Before we move into questions, I do want to note that we don't have a fiscal note on this, but we do have a preliminary fiscal note, and if Mr. Walls can address the committee on the preliminary note.
Mr. Chair and members, we do have some preliminary costs relating to the bill that were provided by the department. Bill would cost the state about $2 million in fiscal year 08 and $2.25 million in 09, with similar costs in 10 and 11, slightly increasing from $2.25 million. That would be matched by an equal amount of federal dollars. And there's also a statewide cost to the counties of about $500,000 per year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wells. Real quick, Mr. Oaks?
Mr. Chairman, if I could add that as near as we can tell from the numbers that we're getting from the Department of Human Services, there are about 2.5 million miles driven for transportation purposes for people. That's why it's expensive. That's why my organization has lost money for the last 4 years straight. And that's our mission, and we're people. But we can't continue to do that indefinitely. Eventually, we will become insolvent.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Part of my question was answered with the fiscal note information, but we're hearing a lot of very good bills in this committee, and of course the question in the end is going to be where are we going to get all the money for all this, but I do want to speak in support of this because once upon a time I worked with Catholic Charities. We dealt with some of this very same population, and the need for community integration is so very important in these people's lives, and how can you do that if you don't have transportation from point A to point B? And it's pretty clear that the need is there and that it's been languishing for a while, so I would speak in support of it.
Representative Abler.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Not to belabor anything, but I think it's important to emphasize, which I think Mr. Oaks did really well, that this was a model change that happened over the years, which we thought was a good idea. Mm-hmm. But we didn't backfill some of the changes that could happen, and I don't know how it didn't get done before, but this is the consequence of reform, and we like how we do it, and the waivered services that he talked about actually provided at less cost than the original beds that we were replacing. And to also point out that one more example of a Medicaid service that people can't make a living working for. And so this is universal across the state, whether it be providers of healthcare, clinics, hospitals, and now DPH providers. So this is what we set up for ourselves, and it's a real challenge as policymakers.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Abler. Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for bringing this forward, Representative Murphy, and thank you for the wonderful testimony. I'm from Faribault, Minnesota, and I worked in the Faribault State Schools and Hospital 40 years ago.
Me too.
Okay, so we witnessed then when we closed the Faribault State Schools and the residents went out into the group homes and now become, and that's where they went and stayed, and we didn't see them for a long time. And then we began to work with them, and I was working in the nursing home industry then, and all of a sudden saw and worked alongside of the clients who were bringing to us and still continue to bring to us. And I want to just applaud the service that they give our residents in handing out mail and passing ice water and taking care of getting them to and from their manicure and beauty shop appointments, and the work that I just wanted to touch on or let you know that they are working and they are performing a very needy service for us as clients. So thank you very much. And they do need to get to and from work, and then they like to go maybe to the show or to something else, or out to eat at Perkins, and then back home again safely. So you really do need this, and I'm very happy to support it.
Representative Weedley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up Mr. Waltz. I guess he went. He left. I had a question about the fiscal note. I just wondered what the $500,000 to counties is, and you know, if we have any more information on that.
We can answer that, Mr. Chair, Representative. Many people, as I said, receive the services through their Medicaid waivered service. There are a lot of people who we serve who do not, have not had access to a waiver to be able to get the dollars to pay for our service. County pays for those services through their CSSA dollars. So there are individuals who the counties see as needing services, such as our DCNH, and they pay for that service. So it's directly out of county dollars.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Thiessen.
Oh, no, I was just wondering if there's anybody here who could tell me from DHS or something why we have two rates.
Is anybody brave enough to try to answer that? Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, my name is Dan McCarthy. I work with the department. The simple answer is those rates are mandated in statute, how rate setting occurs. So it's in 252.46.
And there's no other, Mr. Chair, there's no other reason than that?
The provisions are laid out in statute how those rates are set.
Thank you.
So the answer is it's our fault, Representative.
All right.
Any further questions in regards to House File 1288? With no further questions, Representative Murphy renews her motion to lay over House File 1288 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. If there's no objection, it will be laid over. Thank you for the testifiers for coming today. Appreciate your time. On the last two bills, we are going to switch the last two bills because we're waiting for a fiscal note on Representative Thiessen's bill. And if everything goes right, we may have that fiscal note still today for the committee. So if Representative Loeffler moves that House File 705 be laid over for possible inclusion into the final omnibus bill. And again, since you're a member of this committee, I guess I can still welcome you, Representative Loeffler, to the committee.
Always glad to be welcome. Well, thank you, members. For those who don't serve on the policy committee, we'll give you some background on this. This bill is really about opening up doors of opportunity. We heard yesterday about some of the problems that counties had when, at one point, the waivers were opened up and we had a massive flood of thousands of new people excitedly working with the counties to develop services so that their person and their family who had serious disabilities could be effectively served. When that door closed, the waiting list started again. And what this bill will do was we'll be providing an additional 200 persons per year would be served in the waiver that's known as the MRRC waiver, the waiver for persons with developmental disabilities, beyond what's in the forecast. The state forecast has an additional 300 slots. This would provide an additional 200 per year starting July 1st. And that date is significant as well because the state had, the governor's budget recommends a slower start to save a little money, and we think we'd like to move faster. It also provides an additional 200 positions per year for people in the Family Support Grant Program. And that is a program that helps primarily families with young children deal with additional challenges and services needed by their children with disabilities. And then, once again, another 200 slots per person or per year for semi-independent living services. This is for persons who are adults with developmental disabilities who are looking to move into the group homes, the day training and rehabilitation programs that we've heard about, other support services. And the handout that's in your packet, which says Disability Waivers Waiting List, will give you a picture of where we're at as a state on this situation. For the developmental disabilities, our current caseload is 14,170, but as of February, we have 4,300 families who are waiting to receive services. They may be getting some minor county paid services, but in terms of a full comprehensive program, they're waiting. At the bottom of the page, you'll see the Family Support Grant, which has 1,500 persons with about half of the state's or county's reporting, and 630 for SILS, with also about half. The SILS program is unique in that this is the only program that has a county share of these three programs. It's 30%. Although I'm told that many counties are stepping up with 100% property tax dollars to try and serve people until the state is able to handle it. On the back, you'll see just for the persons on the waiting list for, who have developmental disabilities, how they're allocated by county. And you'll see that every part of the state has families who are hoping and crossing their fingers that they'll have the right opportunities. You will be hearing a bill that we heard in the policy committee that Representative Thiessen has authored that takes advantage of some new federal opportunities that might pick up, you know, another portion of people with some family support programs. And we think that we, in the end, if this were to pass as it is right now, be able to serve about another 2,000 people. And you'll see from the fiscal notes that this is not an inexpensive program or proposal, and that's because serving people with effective trained staff is expensive. And that is part of why we've allowed the waiting list, unfortunately, to grow. With me, I have Tim Mulrooney, who will be sharing a more personal story about what this means for the families that are and their loved ones who are on these waiting lists.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mulrooney. If you could state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Tim Mulrooney, and I am here to speak to you today, hopefully in support of this bill and in support of my son, Emmett. I want to start, I guess, by tipping my hat to Kim Stanley and her comments at the when you heard the comments on the first bill that was heard today. I think she nailed it. You really cannot know how hard it is to parent a special needs child until you've done it. It's difficult to parent a typical child. It takes it to quite another level when you have a special needs child. My wife, Melissa, and I have two children, a four-year-old son, Simon, and a two-year-old son, Emmett. Emmett has been diagnosed with a genetic disorder called Smith-Magenis syndrome. It's a relatively rare genetic syndrome. Essentially, what it means is that he's missing a portion of his 17th chromosome. That's what it means in terms of his chromosomes. What it means for his life is that he will be, is, I suppose, mildly to moderately mentally retarded. He will have serious behavioral challenges. He already has an immune deficiency condition. He has a feeding disorder. He hardly eats. He gets most of his nourishment from a drink supplement. He does not speak, and he will perhaps never speak, but hopefully he will speak, but requires in very intensive speech therapy. He has sleep dysfunction. He has something called sleep inversion, which basically means that he wants to sleep during the day and be up all night. Mm-hmm. And you can just imagine what that would do to your family and what it does to ours. And Emmett, as a result of his condition, and certainly other kids and individuals like him, need the kind of assistance that you're considering with this bill. We would love to do it all ourselves. We strive to do it as much as we can for ourselves. And my wife has, I think, done a valiant effort in that regard, has taken a leave from her career to be home with him 100% of the time, takes him to therapies every day. And part of the reason she's on leave is because of the immune deficiency, and he was unable to be in daycare because he'd get sick all the time and end up in the hospital. It is our hope that he will be able to go to preschool maybe next year and ultimately go to school. In order to do that, he's going to need waiver-type services. He's going to need a personal care attendant. Our family will need quite a bit of the other services that come through this program. And as I said, we'd love to be able to do everything on our own, but it's overwhelming, and even if we were up to that task, we simply don't have the capacity to do it. When you go into having children and raising a family, I think you come to it with lots of dreams for your kids. And our dreams for our kids were all the traditional dreams, that they have academic successes, go to college, maybe have your jobs, maybe have great careers, fall in love and have relationships. And somebody described it to us when we learned of our diagnosis that it is a loss of dreams, and it truly is. I think the time that it crushed me the most was when I realized he probably would never be in love, or at least not have a loving relationship of the kind that I and most of us hopefully experience. And the dream becomes something different. The dream for your child becomes the real core dream. You want to be able to have a happy life. Emma's major challenges are going to be maybe his major challenge is going to be behavioral. He and kids with his condition, when they become frustrated, have outbursts. Even now at 2, he has major outbursts with small amounts of frustration. And without the kind of services you're talking about, he won't be able to go out into the world, and he won't be able to go to school because he needs somebody there with him, and we can't be there 100% of the time. So I really urge you to consider this bill. I am a family law attorney. My wife is a public defender who has spent most of her career before going on leave in juvenile court. And both of us have heard many, many times and read in the cases in the law that the court in those cases sits as a third party looking out for the best interests of the kid. And that's what I think you do here today. I've heard all of the comments up till now on this and the other bills, and I realize there's only so much money. But I also understand that from what I've heard, that the public supports this, that they believe we should help people with these kinds of needs. And you're in the position of the third party who needs to watch out for the best interests of these kids. We do the best we can, but we need help. For that reason, and because I think this is, from what I understand, a dent in the waiting list, not a resolution by any means. Oh, one last just quick comment. We actually applied to be considered for the waiver program in October. We only went 2 days. This morning, my wife got the call that we'll be reviewed for intake. It took 5 to 6 months to even get the call back. And we will presumably go at the end of the waiting list. So everything you can do to diminish the waiting list, I really would urge you to consider doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your very personal testimony. It's appreciated.
And Mr. Chairman, if I might just add, we've heard a lot today from families with younger children, and I have to say that the waiting list for persons with developmental disabilities represents people across a huge age spectrum. In addition to the young families, we have a lot of young people who've gone successfully through our special education program and have been told that the world holds opportunities for them that weren't there before, to become taxpayers, to go into supportive employment like we heard about through the DTNH providers, to live like everyone else away from mom at some point in a group home or a semi-independent living situation, and they feel like their life has been put on hold. And it's frustrating for their family to also see, you know, that they just are kind of stuck in a holding pattern. We also have people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who may have never participated in any of these programs, have been primarily cared for by a loving family, and now as their parents get older, they're saying, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not going to last forever. I should start helping my adult child make a transition to a life of independence. And so when you look at these lists of people, it's people across the entire age spectrum, from the young parents like Tim here to very elderly parents who have stepped up and been there as the without public support for their loved ones for a long, long time, and who are now asking us to step up and help them put together a transition plan. So it really is a comprehensive age range of persons who are waiting here for these services, and hoping that we'll do well when we get our budget targets.
Thank you, Representative Lawford. Any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loeffler, do you know how the department tracks the Family Support Grant Program in that it's a cash assistance and only can be used for expenses that directly relate to the disability? How do they know that cash is used in that way? Do you know the answer to that?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask, and Representative Erickson, I'm going to ask the Department of Human Services to respond to that. I'm not an expert on all the monitoring.
Welcome back, and if you can state your name once again for the record.
My name is Dan McCarthy. Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the Family Support Grant Program is a program that's administered at the county level, and so individuals, families who receive a family support grant have a county case manager, and the parameters that are laid out statutorily in terms of what are the allowable uses guide the case manager working with the family in terms of documenting and ensuring that. But the department itself isn't doing that. It's occurring at the local level.
Thank you. Any additional questions from the committee? Not being so then, Representative Loeffler, any concluding statements?
No, I just want to hope that we are able to help some people achieve their dreams, and I hope that eventually we get to a point where we see these as entitlements rather than and eliminate waiting lists entirely. But I'm not sure if we're going to be there this year, but I'd love to see that.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Loeffler. And I do want to thank Mr. Mulrooney for coming today and testifying about his family story. Representative Loeffler does renew her motion to lay over House File 705 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And with no objection, the bill will be laid over. Our last item for the day is House File 708. Representative Thiessen moves House File 708 to be included in the final omnibus bill to be laid over. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 708 does basically three things, members. Appropriates some more money and asks that the Managed Care Ombudsman does a little bit more work in terms of reporting to us about what's going on with managed care in the area of disabilities. It expands the MINDO program. It extends the date that will go. It extends the date upon which the MINDO program will be expanded. So we won't see any expansion for another year longer of that program. And it tries to address some issues related to prescription drugs for people who qualify for MA and for Medicare, the dual eligible folks. It puts a $12 cap on copays. It covers folks that are applying for Medicare but have not yet applied and are eligible but haven't yet been entered into the program for 60 days. And Mr. Chair, I'd like to make an amendment if I could.
Mm-hmm. Please, Representative.
Page 2, line 10 through page 2, line 14, I'd like to delete that language.
So, Representative Thiessen, you're just deleting paragraph 2.
That's right.
On the bill. Representative Thiessen moves to amend House File 708 by deleting lines 2.10 through 2.14. Is there any discussion on that amendment? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, are you deleting that because you determined it would be too difficult for the Board of Aging to do this kind of tracking? Or, you know, you're asking that they determine whether the recipient is enrolled in a plan. Did that just become too onerous or something?
Mr. Chair, I'm deleting it because the Department of Human Services seems to think it's going to cost $120 million to do this.
Oh.
Now, and I would like to say, I've gotten some fiscal notes from the department in the past when I was in the minority and this year, and I have had concerns about where the department makes their assumptions about some of the programs that we see, and I just wanted to get that on the record.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Since we are talking, okay. Any further
when
questions
hear about
the amendment?
It'll sound a little bit differently, hopefully.
Okay. Since there's no discussion on the oral amendment from Representative Thiessen, all those in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes and the amendment is adopted. Since we are talking about the fiscal note in some ways, we did get the preliminary note in, so Mr. Walls, you can address the committee on that.
Mr. Chair, with the change that the author has incorporated, I don't know how relevant the fiscal note in its current state is to now the condition of the bill. It did have a cost of about $9 million in 08, $43 million in 09, $80 million in fiscal year 2010, and $137 in fiscal year 11. Mr. Chair, if I could also add, I had a discussion with the department earlier today, and they had a concern about the last paragraph of the bill on page 5, section 4, that the bill was drafted that $300,000 be appropriated for the biennium, and that it was their understanding that the cost for the ombudsman would be $300,000 per year, and that if that was the author's intent, that that be changed as well.
And Mr. Chair, we are going to, I think as this moves into finance, what we're going to do is actually appropriate an FTE instead of a particular amount of money. And so I think we could, we'll address that confusion as we move into the Finance Committee, or as we move into the omnibus bill. So,
is that right? Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Walls. So,
Mr. Chair, members, you can see the $300,000 for the Ombudsman's Program. On Section 2, line 2.6 on the co-payments, which would put a $12 cap on co-payments for the dual-eligible prescription drugs, it looks to me from the fiscal note that in 08 it's about $622,000, in 09 about $2.6 million, and stays in the $2.5 to $3 million range in the out years. Just to give people a sense of kind of that. Going, and we'll have to get another fiscal note on it, but I know that people have probably questions about that. So,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say on the representation's oral amendment, there are also some technical changes that should be made to conform, and perhaps we could provide that to the committee LA after the meeting. That would be okay?
That would be satisfied.
Thank you.
Continue.
So, remember, I mean, basically what the bill does are the three things. Ms. Henry, do you want, or do you, we have some testifiers here that can explain perhaps a little bit more.
Ms. Henry, if you can state your name. Excuse me?
I'll let folks testify.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Chris Cunningham. I had the pleasure of speaking before Senator Berglund on this very issue 3 years ago concerning co-pays and how they affect people like me. And as much as I am grateful for the forum to do that, I must tell you that it saddens me that the issue of co-pays has again reared its head to the detriment of many of my friends who have hard enough time getting their personal needs met. This is yet another worry that they have, in addition to getting their daily needs met. As well as that, they've also been in the catch-22 of being poor enough to stay eligible for the entitlements they need without any chance to become taxpayers. When they gladly do so, if they have the ability. This dilemma is especially painful for those with disabilities from birth, who've been in this quagmire even before having the milestones of work, savings, homeownership, marriage, and children. Those in group living arrangements are even more challenged to this end. How can we be expected to pay more for what we need when we can't earn anymore? At the very least, ladies and gentlemen, the playing field is uneven. If the earning and asset limits were such that I could earn more than the $100 in entitlements that I currently have, I would make that co-payment gladly. But to put a budget or a deficit responsibility on the very people that need help from it, it's simply an oxymoron. In more simple terms, if I had my way, I would ask each of you to help me so that I can help contribute to that deficit. The partnership must begin. And as I've said before, the playing field is far from equal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cunningham. Thank you. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, and if you can state your name for the record.
Representative Hudley and the committee members.
If you can move the microphone.
Pardon me. Representative Hudley and members, committee members. I am Don Bortson, parent of six children, one of whom is Dave, who's 30 years of age and has severe mental and physical disabilities. He lives in a medical assistance, waiver-funded foster home in Ramsey County. My request to the legislators is to eliminate the prescription copays for individuals that are on dual eligible for medical assistance and Medicare. Dave did not have to pay medical co-pays when he was on medical assistance, covered his prescription, but since he was transferred to Medicare, he does have co-pays. His prescription co-pays vary from $20 to $25 a month, as can be seen in the attached bills for this applicator. This may not seem like a lot of money, but since Dave only receives $114 from Social Security and is an expensive dresser and eater, he exceeds this amount almost every month. We pay for the amounts that exceeds $114 for his personal expenses. Dave is an expensive dresser not due to his fashion taste, but due to his disabilities. He has cerebral palsy in his legs that causes him to wear out his clothes more rapidly than a normal person. He wears braces and drags his right foot as he walks, which wears out his shoe in less than a month, even though they have more protection up the side than most shoes. He also crawls most of the time when he is in his home, which causes him to wear out the knees on two pairs of jeans and one pair of pajamas each month. His middle disability causes him to chew holes in his shirts and undershirts for stimulation that results in us replacing a couple of them each week. Dave works as a volunteer at the Maplewood Community Center and has meals out in the community a few times a week, so that eats up some more of his and our personal money. Thank you for considering my request and for providing excellent services to the disabled in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bartson. I believe we represent these.
Was there a question for the witness?
Oh, not for the witness.
Okay. At this point,
thank you.
I don't have any questions. I believe we have another testifier. Or Ms. Henry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Disability Law Center. We're part of the Legal Aid Society in Minneapolis. We support the bill, and I won't take any more of your time. The copayment issue, to just be sure this is clear, as Mr. Bordson said, when people were on medical assistance, the legislature wisely did pass a $12 limit for prescription copays. Now, when Part D came in last January, that limit was off for all people who have Medicare as well. And these folks have no more money. Some people that we have as clients have actually more than 10 or 12 prescriptions a month. So it is really a hardship. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Henry. Any questions for the testifiers, Representative Abler, or for the author of the bill?
Thank you.
It's time for discussion.
Yeah. I'm the second author, so these are questions just in a friendly way. But and the $300 fiscal note, $300,000 fiscal note, kind of shows some, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not much for this committee. It's real money, though. But some of these co-pays that have been put on generate pretty small dollars for the kind of difficulties they present, and in the past we try to find ways to kind of carve out certain groups. And I just had a question for the author, for Ms. Henry maybe. How do we bookkeep the $12? We tried to do a $20 thing before, and it didn't work because of the bookkeeping. Is there a way to do that works?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I'm not sure of the technical aspects of it, but I know at the pharmacy counter, eligibility and all this information is verified, and so I think that's where it happens, and the technology is there to do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abel. And as this bill moves forward, and I hope it actually has money to buy this one, that as a provider, you cannot charge a copay. And if the provider waives the copay, then it's easy, then you just don't get more than $12. But it needs to be made back up in the rate so that the MA check would include the copays over $12 so that the pharmacist is made whole. That's just a technical thing that somebody will figure out. And the second thing, which didn't get mentioned much, is the ombudsman, mm-hmm. which it seems like that's a good idea on some of these folks that are challenged. And this is a population beyond just the copay population. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mr. Thiessen?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Henry? Yes would be the answer, I think. But
yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Abler. Yes, this is the increased staff position here is for the Office of the Managed Care Ombudsman, and we feel that as more people with disabilities are enrolling in our medical assistance managed care options, we need additional staff to help people navigate through that system.
And this, just to clarify, so this would be for anybody in a PMAP? In any PMAP program across the state, or just for this subset?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler. This would be additional staff to the Office of the Ombudsman for Managed Care, so technically, yes. I mean, they okay. serve everyone, seniors, low-income families, and children.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Thiessen. I mostly want to make a comment to Mr. Boydson and Mr. Cunningham. Thank you for sharing your story and your perspectives. I think you are illustrative of the fact that there are humans, people in Minnesota with real needs, and we're going to have difficult discussions and difficult decisions to make. But I'm really grateful for the stories that you're telling. It will help me a lot, and I appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, the fiscal note wasn't available before, but it's been during the course of the committee available. Is that the case?
Mr. Chair, I just got a preliminary fiscal note. I think we have like two copies that came about 10 minutes ago.
Yep. Okay.
And it should also, it should also be noted, Representative Dean, that due to the author's amendment that there could be some changes in the fiscal note that we currently have. The numbers are still jumping around.
Did it break the copy machine when you tried?
Didn't have anything to do with it.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, just to go to this issue of co-pays briefly, I mean, first of all, to clarify where Representative Abler was going, you know, this would set above $12, MA would amount would be included in the MA payment coming to providers. And so, there is this issue with the $12 copay. If the person doesn't have $12, there's no way to enforce that, and the state doesn't reimburse the pharmacists for that money, as I understand it. So that's where the providers actually they may eat that $12, which kind of comes to a larger question I think here on copays, and maybe we ought to think about it. These copays don't do the effect that you want to have for copays, which is to address utilization. I mean, this is a money raising thing for the state of Minnesota. And in a lot of sense, it's a money-raising thing, both on the backs of the people that are disabled in this circumstance, but also on the backs of our pharmacists. And, you know, I think we ought to really think hard about whether maybe we just ought to have not gone down this path to begin with and whether we ought to change it going forward. So I'll leave it at that.
Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was kind of wrestling with that whole issue on the copays, too. I mean, obviously, copays also, in addition to recouping revenue, are intended to create somewhat of a personal buy-in for healthcare costs. But also, you know, if copays become a detriment or a barrier to getting preventive care, the kind of care that people need to stay healthy, they become completely counterproductive. So, just to add to what Representative Thiessen was saying, I think we really need to look at it, particularly with this population, about what it's really doing.
That's all I have.
Okay, so. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to hear from the department how this change would affect their bookkeeping, their record keeping, their, for example, leveraging of federal dollars. Does this have any... Can the department comment on that? I mean, I don't want a political statement from you. I just want a factual statement or explanation.
Representative Thiessen? Okay.
Hi, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Karen Russell, and I'm with the legislative liaison with the Department of Human Services and Healthcare, and I didn't quite get your question.
Well, this would be a major change, and I'm wondering to what extent it affects your in tracking Medicare, this Medicare program, as well as the fact that these folks are covered by MA.
I'll have to get back to you on that. I'll talk with our systems people
and see
if they're going to track that.
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, we do this. We capped the copays for everybody else except this dual eligible population. I think it was an oversight that we didn't do it when we did it for everybody else. So we're actually trying to correct an oversight. So the department does this for just about everybody else. Would that be close to accurate?
Well, that helps me.
Maybe I'm overstating it, but
Ms. Henry.
Mr. Chair, The department does have a $12 limit now for people in group residential housing. And I guess I'm going to have to be corrected from someone else. I suddenly lost track of the other folks. But I know that the $12 figure for people with disabilities came out of the effort to limit co-payments for those folks.
Yeah. Thank you.
But we would certainly support eliminating the $12 as well. Absolutely.
Thank you. That's more what it is. So the department is doing it. Maybe not as broadly as I thought, but for similar proof.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the preliminary fiscal note, it looks like enrollment is roughly 99,000 to 107,000 over 2008 to 11. And the costs are rolling up 4 million to 129 million. It just seems like it's wrong.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't disagree with you. We did eliminate that part of the bill. But I don't disagree with you.
Yes.
But we need more time to
look
at it. Thank you.
I have a question for the testifiers. It comes out of Mr. Bordson's testimony when he talked about making up the difference for his son's co-pays. What happens to those that may not have family available to help with the co-pays or may run out of money from their own payments and can't pay for the absolutely needed prescriptions for their conditions? What happens now?
Mr. Chair, it's very difficult. We hear from people who are going to different pharmacies, trying to find a pharmacy that might allow them to have credit. People go without new clothes or anything else because all of their money is used. And I just want to clarify that people who have Medicare and medical assistance now that are living in group situations don't have that $12 limit because, of course, they have to pay the Medicare Part D prescriptions, and that's Mr. Bordson's situation for his son. These folks are absolutely in a catch-22 because they have limited income. Everything that they can possibly get has to go to pay their costs in the group home and their service costs. Usually under the home and community waiver. So it's an extremely serious and untenable situation. I think we would find different answers to the question, but there are many people that are very desperate right now trying to cover those Medicare Part D co-payments with almost no money.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Henry. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, you're familiar with TRICAP in our area.
Absolutely.
And there are programs like that in the state as a partial answer to your question. This doesn't cover the need. I'm not suggesting that. But I do know there are some private initiatives, groups of businesses and others in communities who have contributed to a fund to help people with co-pays on prescription drugs or to buy down the cost of prescription drugs where they need them. So as part of the total puzzle picture. I mean, the state needs to do its part, but there are community partners, if you will, who are helping out in many communities.
Additional questions on the bill? Well, we may actually get done a couple minutes early, which is surprising. Any final comments, Ms. Henry or Representative Thiessen?
No.
Representative Thiessen then renews his motion that House File 708 be laid over for possible inclusion in the final omnibus bill. With no further items or discussion, the meeting is adjourned.